Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network on theconsciousresistance.com and theseedsofliberty.com. So today we have Melissa Rakovich, who's a voluntarist anarchist from the state of Washington, and she's a peaceful parent, aspiring acupuncturist, a doula, and a childbirth educator. And we're going to talk about the history of how she came to voluntarism and peaceful parenting, as well as how we met, because you know, we've been talking, you know, over Facebook for a while, and then we came to the idea that, you know, because she has two kids, like a 20-month-old and a 3.5-year-old, right? I think.
Right.
And so we had the idea of starting a peaceful parenting podcast ourselves, called the Non-Aggressive Parenting Podcast, the NAP, and because I think, you know, on my show, I love to interview unschoolers and homeschoolers and peaceful parenting people, and I think that subject is vast and deserves a podcast of its own. So I think that'd be wonderful to do. So So Melissa, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to join you.
Yeah, we've been talking for a while, so it's nice to finally get you on the show, and so you can meet everybody, and also tell them about, you know, what we plan to do together, because I'm pretty excited about it. Most of my guests, I guess because I have kids, so my message is more geared towards, you know, parents and you know, and people who send their kids to government school, right? Since I'm around those kind of people, you know, homeschoolers all the time, so they're my genre.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
So I think that's gonna be great. But get into, please, about your history of you know, how you came to voluntarism and peaceful parenting. Let my audience know.
All right, so I found peaceful parenting first. I wanted to be a doula, and which is a birth attendant, and usually I was focusing on home births, and so home birth kind of gives way to peaceful parenting. A lot of people who are into the natural side of birth also see parenting as a gentle transaction between a parent and a child. And so I was turned on to a book called The Continuum Concept by Jean Liedloff, which I think I mentioned to you before. And that started my journey to peaceful parenting. That was kind of the beginning of that rabbit hole. And from there, I trained as a doula, and I started attending births, and I talked to parents and midwives, and they were all very familiar with the peaceful parenting concept. And then I read more books. And so, and the most interesting thing to me about it was when I would talk to people or when I would read up on it, it was very authentic to listen to. And it was something in me where I would nod my head, like, that makes sense. I understand that. So it was something that grew, the interest for it grew as I was learning it more and more. So, and then by the time I had my daughter, I was 32 years old, and I started the path at 19 years old. So I was well aware as to how I wanted to be a parent, and how I would implement parenting and that sort of thing. So that was my peaceful parenting path. And what happened was, peaceful parenting is all about respecting children and getting on their level and communicating with them and reasoning with them and helping them through whatever they're going through. And oftentimes it's tantrums. That's definitely what my daughter's going through now at 3.5 years old. She's got all these big emotions but doesn't have the vocabulary just yet. And I get a lot of criticism from my family, especially because I don't discipline her for it. But what I do is I get on her level and I try to engage her and try to work through the situation with her and try to get her to understand it's okay to have these emotions, but this is how we can you know, come to a conclusion that you'll be happy with. And what I learned was, so it's basically non-authoritarian parenting. And I started questioning more and more, this is how I'm raising my children. How am I going to prepare them for the world outside when the world outside is, it's very entrenched in the state and very entrenched in rules and discipline and that sort of thing. And I started questioning more and more, what anarchy really was. I definitely identified with anarchy for the majority of my life, but I always thought that government was a necessary evil. I didn't see a way around it. But the more I started questioning, the more I became more honest with myself about, well, just because things are the way they are doesn't mean it's the right way, or doesn't mean that I have to go along with it. And so it was really more a question of figuring out how I want to live my life so that my kids see that I'm walking my talk. So if I'm teaching them communication, if I'm teaching them to empower themselves and to govern themselves, which is what I really like to focus on, then I should be doing that myself. And that's what started me into anarchy. So.
Great. Yeah. Me as well. I was introduced to a Stefan Molyneux video when my son was born in 2010. A couple months later, my wife sent me a video. I think it was like 17 reasons not to spank your child, something like that, Stefan Molyneux. And yeah, it really changed my life. It's the first time I saw a Stefan Molyneux video, the first time I was introduced to him. And that's how I kind of got into volunteerism, was through that. And my wife always likes to brag that, see, I'm the one that got you into this stuff. which is kind of true, I guess, but I just took it and ran with it, and I just, you know, it devoured like economic books, history books, and you know, Larkin Rose's books, and various books like that. So, but the peaceful parenting definitely is central to me now, because I really believe that, you know, if we want, you know, it's one thing to talk to status, you know, people who advocate for government and to try to change their mind and get them to see the illogicality in their reasoning. But it's quite another thing to raise people peacefully and compassionately and morally, and
right.
And teach them that there is really no such thing as coercive authority, and it doesn't deserve your obedience. And
right, exactly.
And once, you know, because that's the thing, one thing that Larkin Rose recently was talking about in his rant, which I love, is that statism tries to make obedience a virtue, right? It's like people want to do good, right? Everybody wants to do good, right? And so the people who are, you know, like the tyrants and the people who want power, the sociopaths, they take that desire to want to do good, and they pervert it and say, as long as you give me power, that's good.
Exactly. Because you're following the rules and you're doing what you were told, which are things that I cringe at. And I really try, unless it's going to physically harm my child, I allow them to figure out what works for them and figure out their own rules, you know, for the most part. So, and which is the opposite of the way that most, well, especially our generation, I think that we were all raised with like a heavy dose of statism. And this is what you do when you listen to your teachers and you listen to whoever the authority figure is in your situation. And you're never really taught. I was never really taught to empower myself. You know, I was never really taught to think for myself. I was told what to do. And that kind of just, it's like you're funneled into that thinking. And, you know, and thankfully I started questioning early. And thankfully a lot of people have been questioning it for themselves. And that's why there's more than one of us around, right? So,
yeah. Like you, my family, is not too, you know, agreeable to the way we choose to parent. And, you know, my family, as well as my wife's, family, mostly are just her mother. But yeah, it is pretty difficult, you know, when two ideologies clash,
right.
and you know, you don't want it to be a conflict, but they want you to raise your kids a certain way. And you're like, mm-hmm. No, I don't want to do that. I'm sorry. and don't take it as an offense if I don't, because it's nothing personal against you. It's just the ideas that I don't agree with. It's the principles that I think are flawed, right? I mean, everybody's imperfect, but you know, I think volunteers are quite honest with themselves that that maybe they were raised in flawed principles, and therefore they seek more logically consistent principles, right?
Right. Exactly. Well, and that's just it, though, is that, you know, with my parents, I've had to actually tell them, like. Because, or actually they've come to me and they're like, well, what was wrong with the way we raised you, you know? And I'm like, well, I actually could write a book on that, but I'm not going to get into that. And I've forgotten about it. And this is not why I'm making this decision. I saw what you did and I don't agree with it. And, I also found my own truths as a parent. And so that's what's important. It's not, you know, it's not, it wasn't to hurt them by any means, but they get defensive in a way. Like, I've noticed that trend with parents. They're like, well, wait, why are you doing that differently? Mm-hmm. I thought we did a good job. And I'm like, well, you did what you thought was a good job, and that's fine, but I'm going to try to keep pushing it, you know, make it a little bit more peaceful, or make it a little bit more about the child, you know, so right. instead of the relationship, because my parents are very much into being the authority, you know, and I'm the opposite. So I think they also cringe from that, but they also know they can't tell me what to do, because they never really could. So I was just going to do it anyway. So, so definitely with my parenting. So yeah, but they get defensive about it, and I think they do take it personally, because they don't know how else to take it, you know. And mm-hmm. sometimes, so that's why I try to still engage and talk with them, and as much as they'll listen, but they think yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I was telling you recently that, you know, I was with a family member, and one thing she said was that if my daughter, my 3-year-old, she fell and she was crying, and my wife went to go pick her up and soothe her and everything. And then she said, this family member, she said, why are you picking her up? She's just trying to control you. You see, it's all about manipulation, right? She wants to just control you like that. And it's just...
Because that's the agenda of a three-year-old, right?
Yeah, 3-year-olds, and some people even go even way back into infancy. They like the same logic. Even an infant is thinking, right. How do I control you?
Well, and that's exactly what my aunt told me when my daughter was born, and we never let her cry it out. She co-slept with me, and I nursed her to sleep, and every time she would wake up, I would go in there, and my aunt told me once when I was going through the motions of doing this, she goes, you know, she's just trying to manipulate you, right? And I'm going, she's 3 months old. What are you talking about? You know, but that's what she really believed, and that's how she thought babies just, they're crying to manipulate you, and I'm like... Well, no, they're crying because that's how they communicate. So, right. Where's that disconnect? How did you think that babies are, you know? So, yeah, I definitely have dealt with that as well.
And one thing that I think of when people say that to me is, how was your childhood, right?
Right.
How were you treated? Because the way people were raised is determines in large part how they view parenting, right? Or how they view even relating to other people. You know, if your parents were estranged from you, didn't listen to you, ignored you, like, how are you gonna think about how people are in general when you raise like that? You know,
exactly.
So it's the, you know, that's why it's so important for, you know, people who do peaceful parenting, I mean, and also unschooling as well, or homeschooling, that you know, you're always attending to your child, and you're respecting their consent and what they want to do as much as possible. Of course, you know, there's like, you know, people are like, what are you going to do if your kid runs in the street? You going to let him? No, of course not. I mean, the way I approach it is like, I know that I'm older, stronger, and bigger, but you know, to assert that and use that so I can control them and have them do what I want, that's not power. That's just like, that's barbaric. That's savage, you know?
That's manipulative, you know? That's what's manipulative, right?
Right. And so, you know, the hardest part is to really figure out, all right, you know, what's your problem? Why are you having a tantrum? Why are you crying? And what can we do to resolve that or find a solution? Without me just telling you, you know, shut up, stop crying, calm down, you know. And so, you know, talking to your kids and, you know, like the way I talk to my kids, I tell people, I like to imagine that I'm a peer, you know,
like a
friend, you know, like you wouldn't, or some people, you know, that I've interviewed, they say even a neighbor, you know, you wouldn't treat your neighbor, you know, if your neighbor dropped a dish and broke it, would you like yell at your neighbor and scold your neighbor, you know?
Right, exactly. Well, and then think about it, too. How long are you going to continue that relationship? I know my dad, I'm 36 years old. My dad still thinks that he can tell me what to do or lecture me, you know? And I'm like, you know, I like to think that, you know, if I'm raising my children to believe in themselves and let them be self-governing to a point, as long as they're not harming themselves, that they'll carry that through their life. I mean, because how long are you going to try to control your children? And then when they get to be an adult, do you still continue that, or are you going to move on and shift and allow them to be who they are? I've always thought that it's important to just always allow them to be who they are, and then they can naturally get into what they're supposed to when they get older and also be more self-sufficient for it as well. So
right.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Like, you know, let them be free as often as possible. And, you know, I have a little group, a homeschooling group, we meet up once a week. And we like to go to various parks and, you know, cook outdoors, and then we go hiking and stuff. And so I love to let the kids just play in the park, you know, jump on rocks and logs and stuff like that and just do stuff and let them go and me not even look at them. And because sometimes when you're in the woods and you're looking at your kids, you know, the immediate instinct is, no, don't do that. Be careful. Don't hurt yourself. Put that down, you know.
Right.
So sometimes it's comforting to just say, all right, you go do, or especially if they're with a lot of people and a lot of group, you're like, all right, you're with a group, just go and have fun, you know.
Yeah. And I find that with my children, like my daughter the other day, she got her Easter basket from her dad, and she got back home and she had the Easter basket and she was like using the fake grass and just throwing it in the air and dancing underneath it. And my first instinct was like, I just vacuumed. What are you doing? No, don't do that. But then I have to stop myself and I'm like, why am I stopping her? This is what a kid does. This is what they're exploring. This is fun for her. So I have those instincts sometimes where I'm like, ah, oh, wait. No, it's fine. You're totally fine. It's not going to kill anybody. It's going to, whatever, go for it. Have fun, you know? So.
Yeah, a good example. Yesterday I was in a health food store after my daughter's ballet class, and then the kids were like, you know, I got them like a smoothie, and they were like asking, can I have a smoothie? Can I have a smoothie? And I was like getting it slowly, and he's like, can I have a smoothie? I want a smoothie. I was getting it slowly, and finally got it to them. And then the cashiers were watching me, and then the one cashier that was checking me out, she said, she's like, wow, that's amazing how calm and collected you are. and I said, you know what? I think that when parents try to control their kids and what they do, I think that's exhausting, you know? Always when you try to say, don't do this, don't do that, do it this way, you know? And you try to control everything, that's exhausting parenting. And of course, you know, that's when those parents are like, all right, just go to school, I can't deal with this, you know, I don't want to be, you know? And I'm like, as long as they're not killing anybody, that's what I told the woman, as long as they're not killing anybody, they're fine. I'm like, go ahead. So I'm going to start laughing. But I'm like, or maybe making a mess, but, you know, as much as possible.
Right, exactly. Yeah, or like I've, you know, take my kids to the park and, you know, they're running and they're doing whatever. And I like, and that's another thing too, is I put a lot of faith and trust in my children. I also let them fall. You know what I mean? So like I allow them to figure out things. I mean, for the most part, like if they're climbing on a play structure, and usually they're climbing on play structures that are like well beyond their age group, but I allow them to do it and I let them experience it. And I kid you not, there are other children that are the exact same age and the parents are running over there and they're like, no, don't do that. Oh my God, you're going to fall. What are you doing? And this is going to wait. I'm like, you're going to raise a hypochondriac, like let them fall, let them explore, you know? So, that's definitely another thing that I like to do is just let them be, you know, let them figure it out, you know, and that's what gives them the self-confidence. And in fact, my daughter and I were going to the co-op and I was carrying my son and, she was running full force toward the door, totally slid onto the concrete right in front of the door, smacked her head into the glass door.
Oh,
wow. She got up and dusted herself off. And the two people that were nearby were like, so impressed. They're like, how did your kid just do that? And I'm like, 'cause I don't freak out. Like I allow her to fall. And if she needs me, I'll go to her. But for the most part, I allow her to react the way she needs to. Right. And she just, you know, that's part of life. She gets up and she kept going. So I was waiting for a big whale to come out of that one because that looked pretty brutal, but I was impressed too. I was like, oh, there she is. She knows what she's doing. All right. You know, so it was a proud parenting moment for me.
So you're saying she wasn't trying to control you then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Not that I can figure out. Not yet.
I mean, even the jungle gyms at like playgrounds, like, okay, so my kids are used to playing outside in the woods on rocks, on trees and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So when they go to playgrounds and like jungle gyms, which are really like artificial, like, you know, artificial play areas as opposed to the woods, they like you said, they like master that and conquer it and climb everywhere you're not supposed to. And like you said, like, and also the other thing is, like, even if they fall there, because most of the ground is like padded or like special, like foamy type ground, right? So it's even less of a risk if they climb there, and it's kind of funny that parents react like that. But I think I think that, you know, when we, you know, had that initial instinctual reaction, part of that is due to the way we were raised, And I notice that myself constantly. You know, like I do a lot of things, and you know, I always try to be calm, not shout, you know, not yell. But you know, things happen, and sometimes I do. But I try to catch myself, breathe, calm down. You know, say it's not a big deal. You know, and my wife catches me sometimes. I'm grateful, and I try to catch her too. You know, because you know, we're all raised in this authoritarian mindset, and it's hard to break it.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, as I think that hopefully with our podcast that we'll be starting, that we can help people to navigate this interesting area of parenting, which is not like, I mean, I don't know how old like true authoritarian parenting is. I'm not really sure. Like, but I don't know if this is a completely new thing. I'm not even sure actually. Is it like popular in the tribal regions or, you know, with like nomadic people? I don't even know.
Well, one thing that was interesting that got me into peaceful parenting was that book, The Continuum Concept. And the basic premise of it was that this woman was down in South America, and she was with a tribe. And she was there for other reasons. But what she noticed was how harmonious the tribe worked together, how families were very much connected, how there wasn't a word for depression in their language, how if a man were to fall, a woman would come up and give him a hug, and that wasn't like, you know, you're not being a man. Like, so she started noticing these trends in this tribe, and they were incredibly happy. And so she started noticing, okay, this has got to be from how they raised their children.
Right.
And so she started noticing that they co-slept and they breastfed, extended breastfeeding. They carried their children. They loved them. They went to them if they cried. I'm sure they didn't. They probably don't have a word for manipulation either in this tribe. So that was like it was a really groundbreaking book. And it was one of many tribes, you know, that are down there. The name of the tribe is slipping me right now, but what I've learned though is that it depends on the culture, right? And usually tribes more act like a tribe as far as parenting goes. It'd be interesting to find out where exactly the authoritarian parenting came from, you know, and what culture really, you know. So I would guarantee that it came from a culture that prided itself on war, you know.
Right, and also is closely associated with rise of nation states. Right.
Because
the you know, the children are the most impressionable. You know, that's the most impressionable years of our lives. Right.
Right.
And if you can, you know, instill an idea into their brain that, you know, that this is how you're supposed to act in society, you know, and it's hard to break that, you know, and then on top of that, you put 12 years of government school. And so it's really, really, they're planting the seed deep into the brain. So, you know, it's our job is to uproot that authoritarian status seed, because, you know, as we know that, you know, statism are more specifically the belief in authority, because, you know, basically that's what government is, the belief in authority, that some people have, you know, superhuman rights or are exempt from morality, than other people. And when we do that, you know, that's really the root of pretty much the most horrific atrocities in history.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that's interesting too, like the seed, you know, when children go to public school, it's driven in that much further. And that's why when parents discover that they're going to homeschool or unschool their children, there's a process when you take your children outside of public school, you de-school them. So before you get to unschooling or homeschooling, and it's something that I've heard quite a bit in the unschooling community, is you allow them to deprogram from what they were force fed and what they were taught to believe as authority, and you allow them to, you know, let that dissolve, and then you can allow them to get back into who they were and into unschooling and their interests and that sort of thing. So I think that's a really interesting thing to think about too, is the fact that you have to deprogram.
Can you go into your history of how, you know, your government school experience went and why you decided to unschool or homeschool?
Well, okay, so I was a product of divorced parents who both individually moved a lot, and so I went to 15 different schools by the time I was 14.
Oh my God.
And it was about a school a year, or 2 to 3 schools a year, I kept moving to. And at the age of 15, I decided, you know what? this is ridiculous. I already read Shakespeare at the age of 11. I read The Godfather at 13. Like, I was reading all these books that were well, you know, advanced for what my age group was or my grade group. And I remember a teacher telling me that I shouldn't be reading those books because I'll get bored in class. And so, you know, like, there's logic, right? So I just decided, like, you know what? I don't need this. And I decided to leave school at 15, and I never looked back. So, and maybe it's because I moved a lot, and maybe because I went to so many different schools, and but when I think back on schooling, my stomach hurts. Like, I just cringe. It just seems like someone equated public schooling to it's basically prison for children, and that's exactly what it felt like. You're all supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to stand in line, you're supposed to sit down, you're supposed to do exactly what you're told every second of the day, and if you do anything that resembles being a child, you're going to get punished, right? That always stuck out to me. Like, I remember being fearful of doing anything out of line because you would get punished, you know. And I actually went to schools that where they actually were allowed to spank you, or hit you. Wow. Yeah. So that was like, that was another thing. As I got older, I just realized how much it, like, all that schooling didn't do anything for me. Once I left school at the age of 15 and I went on my journey of life, I learned so much more that way. I was learning what I wanted to learn. And about 10 years after that, I heard the word unschooling, and it was from a home birth that I attended. And the parents had already had like 4 other children, and they were unschooling their children. And I remember having a conversation after the baby was born, because I was just so fascinated with how these children were learning, you know, or just being, essentially, is what it is. And and so back then I got into the term unschooling. And again, with the parenting, with the peaceful parenting, the more I learned about unschooling, the more it made sense to me. And even to the point where I thought, oh, well, I wish I had done that. I wish I was allowed to explore my interests. You know, I wish I was encouraged to, you know, get into what I wanted to get into. And so, and then I just knew at that point, like, there's no going back. Like, I wasn't going to send my children to school at that point if I were to have children, you know. And so, and then now after having children, and I see them, and I see how, you know, even at their ages that my son is 20 months old and my daughter is 3.5, we're unschooling. We've been unschooling since they've been born. Whatever they're interested in, we encourage. We try to facilitate a process so that they can learn what they want to learn or create what they want to create. And that's basically what unschooling is. And that makes, and more as we're doing this, it makes a lot more sense to do unschooling, because it's just going to go flow along with their life, and they're just going to discover themselves better and have more autonomy and more confidence in who they are. So that's kind of where my whole schooling and unschooling theories came from.
Great. I was at a mechanic getting my oil change yesterday. And it was like, you know, you have to wait inside of it's like a convenience store. And my kids were just having fun, just running around, you know, laughing with each other, running after each other and just laughing. And one thing that I noticed with my kids is, I don't know if this has to do with the way I parent or the way I raise them, but they always bring smiles to other people's faces. I don't know if everybody's kids do that to people, but my kids definitely do that. Like, when my kids come, like, people start smiling and they just laugh. And I think part of that is due to the fact that recognize authority, right? They would say hi to anybody. They would go up to anybody and talk. You know, my daughter says hi to anybody.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it. And so I was talking to this one woman was there, and she was looking at my kids and she was smiling. And then I started talking to her and I found out she has kids. She has one child, like a three-year-old. You know, she works at some corporation, and then she said her husband works at he's a counselor in a public school, and then she asked me what I do, and I said, oh, I'm an acupuncturist herbalist, and I also am a homeschooler with my kids. And then she said, oh, I've heard about that. That is so good. She's like, all the time I've been listening to public school and how bad it's getting, you are doing such a great job. And it was very encouraging. And she's like, I think I'm going to get into something like that. But she's like, she was thinking of more Montessori. I'm like, yeah, my wife's thinking about that, but that's like outrageously expensive. I don't think it's worth it.
Right.
But what really amazed me was that I just brought it up, and she just, like, it all this stuff. I didn't have to, like, convince her about it, you know,
right.
But she brought up, she's like, she admitted that things were going wrong and that she wouldn't want to put her own child in public school. And I said, yeah,
right.
I mean, sometimes, you know, you look back at your own experience in public school or government school, and how can you, if you didn't enjoy it, how can you sanely admit that you would put your own children in government school? You know, if you didn't enjoy
yeah.
yourself, if it was a miserable, dreadful experience, what kind of a person would you be to say my kids have to go that and endure that as well?
Well, that's part of the authoritarian belief, is that, well, this is what you do. This is what you do with your children, because that's what was done to me. And that's, you just funnel along through that train of thought and you just do it because it's apparently it's a rite of passage, right? Like, well, everybody, school sucks for everybody. So,
right, right,
you know,
right.
It's going to suck for him too. And they just have to deal with it because that's
right.
the real world, right? Like,
right.
I've heard that so many times, and it's like, but you have a choice. You don't have to put your child in a horrible situation. Like, you can actually change that. Like, so it is interesting. A lot of people just kind of give up on that. Like, well, I did it. They're going to have to do it, you know? So it, which is unfortunate, but it is interesting. I've had many conversations with people where they go, oh yeah, public school. Like, they get it, you know,
yeah.
they understand how bad it is. And, which it's not that much different than when I talk to statists, it's like, or, you know, everyone who believes that government is necessary, they will acknowledge at that government produces mediocre at best services, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that they really excel at, and the only thing that the government's really good at, is war, right? So, but and even statists will admit that, you know, but they still cling to, but we got to do it because that's what we were told, and this is, you know what I mean? So it's kind of similar thinking. It's a similar process to me.
Yeah,
anyway.
The appeal to antiquity. Logical,
right.
logical fallacy, you know, it's been done this way, so my grandparents did it, my parents did it, we got to
right.
do it, our kids have to go through it. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's exactly how tyranny happens. That's exactly how, you know, injustices are allowed to happen, is by people
yep.
just passively submitting and accepting that, you know, if everybody's doing it, then I got to do it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And it's just so sad that, you know, people, you know, they would rather be, I guess, accepted in the mob than stick out
right.
and stand up for something moral, or stand up even for their own children. Like people,
yes.
some people really, really don't even have a backbone to say, no, I'm not going to subject my child to that. That's completely horrible. That's a big waste of time. It's going to destroy their creativity, their imagination. They're never
yeah.
going to get those years back, you know?
Right.
And,
exactly.
And few people have the courage to do that because you know, they're afraid to stand out and say, oh, you're homeschooling. Oh, you're one of those people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, and then one of the things, too, that I see resistance with, like, you know, well, I got to do public school because we both, me and my, you know, the partner or the father or the mother, whatever, they both have to work, right? And
right, yeah.
One thing that I've always, like, thought about, I'm like, yeah, but if you really sat down, if you really looked at it, like, is there any possible way that if you really wanted to do homeschooling, if you really didn't want your children in public school, I bet you could figure that out. I bet you could figure out some sort of schedule, some sort of something that you could work to provide that environment for your child, and you just alter your life a little bit. That's exactly what I had to do, is change up what I'm doing, you know, to make money, or change up what I'm doing with school, and, you know, and so, but I, and it can be stressful and it can be hard, but to me, all of that is an investment into raising my children and allowing them the unschooling experience. So, and, you know, I mean, maybe not everyone's able to do that. I'm not saying that, but I think it's easy to chalk up, you know, that they're just going to go to public school because, well, it's free daycare, right? You know, so,
right.
you know, essentially.
Yeah, when people tell me that, you know, we have to do that because we need two incomes, you know, I say that, you know, you have to make a decision in your life. What's important to you, right?
Right.
Is it important to maintain the lifestyle as you have currently had it with two incomes, or is it important mm-hmm. that your kids' needs and desires are catered to, right? And whatever you choose, you model your life around that. You make it work, right? So if you say my kids are of the utmost importance, you're gonna do what you can. You're gonna make sure that that's a reality, right?
Yeah. There's no exactly.
question. There's no question about it. No question at all. If that's the decision you make, you're gonna make it happen. That's it. That's all I tell people.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so it's not it's not a matter of money. It's more like I tell people this, like, we live in New York right now, and if we need to, we're gonna move wherever we need to move to make it
right.
happen. If we can't afford to do it here, if it's too expensive, we're gonna move because our
right.
kids are more important than where we're living.
Right. Exactly.
So
yeah.
I think people have to get their priorities straight in their mind first. And also, I think people who say that excuse don't really understand completely the damage that government school does and what
yes.
Unschooling offers, right? Because
yes.
Here's another interesting argument or thought process that I go through with some people is what bureaucrats are trying to do by saying your kids need to go to government school is they're saying, this is the information you're going to need to learn for the next 12 years. 12 years into the future, this is the information you're going to need to learn to get a job.
Right.
And then if you go 3 more years after that, let's say 15 years. This is the information you're going to need to know for 15 years in the future when you get a job in 15 years. This is what they're going to need, what they're going to want, right, your employers. And I'm like, now you look back, let's say 20 years, when the internet was just getting started, and let's say a few more before he was even born, before anybody knew what the internet was. Now, those kids in public school, the people, they're like, this is what you're going to need to learn in 15 years.
Exactly.
How do you know? Basically,
you
what they're
can't
doing
know
is,
that.
What
right.
they're basically doing is they're predicting the future. They're saying,
right.
we know what you're going to need in 15 years, which nobody knows. Nobody.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right.
So the only way that you can ensure that your kids are going to thrive is that you give them the freedom to pursue whatever they want to pursue. And by definition, that will be what they're most skilled at and most likely to make a business at.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, it goes back to giving them the encouragement to be self-governing, giving them the encouragement to be their own person and be free from authority, and that's what unschooling really does, is that if you're encouraging their passions and their pursuits, they're going to learn what they want to learn, and they're going to learn something. A lot of people think that unschooling is they're not learning anything, and it's like, no, that's not what that is. What it is it's pursuing what they personally want, and what can be better than that? And why would you want your child to be put in a cookie cutter situation where all the children are learning exactly the same thing, what they're supposed to be learning, and usually it's below the level of intellect that they have, So, and they're going to get bored, and they start acting out, and then there's discipline problems, and then, It's just like this crazy cycle, and it's like, we just allow children to be what they are, and it's a short time, it really is only a short amount of time, they'll be able to figure out what they want to do and make their own decisions and have the self-confidence through all of that. So, which is the best thing I could ever give my children, is allow them to have self-confidence, allow them to learn their life lessons, and lovingly guide them along that, as a peer, So, yeah.
Government is a, the idea of government is a one-size-fits-all solution, right? Anything that, government tries to do through their coercive laws is always a one-size-fits-all, no questions asked, mandatory, compulsory, And some people object whenever I talk about government. They're like, you like to use the word force a lot. I'm not really comfortable with this word force.
Well, what would you call it?
I know. Right? And I'm like, well, and if we're talking about government school, I'm like, have you heard of truancy laws?
Yes, exactly. Or not only even that, but there's such an infringement on the way you parent. Like, say if you wanted to take your child out of school to go on a vacation and it wasn't during vacation times, there's a lot, you're met with resistance from the school. They will either tell you that that's not allowed, or that they're going to dismiss your child from that school, or they're going to get expelled, which is nuts. Like, how did they ever get the authority over your children, over you? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of infringement that's happening with the authority in the school toward your child. You know, they want your child to learn this way. They want your child in school these days, no matter what. So whatever you've got going on in your family, it's not acceptable, right? So that's another aspect of that, too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, first when you're young, you know, you obey your parents, right? They're the first authority, and you obey the teacher, they're the other authority, yeah. Then you obey the police officer, and you obey the politicians. You know, the obedience just never ends, or you get punished. You know, so it's the appeal to force or the appeal to the stick, logical fallacy. It's like, I can hurt you, that's why I'm right.
Exactly, right? That's basically what that is. Yeah,
I can
exactly.
Tase you, I can cage you. That means right. I'm right. Might makes right. Right, that's completely the.
So maybe it's not that the word, the use of the word force isn't what makes people comfortable. It's the reality you're bringing to the situation, right? So they're having to acknowledge, yeah, government is force, because you can't really argue against that. You know, I mean, if you do, you're not going to use anything valid, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, it is force if you look at it. So, and people do get uncomfortable with that, but I think it's because they get uncomfortable with the truth, right? So
that reminds me of a recent Largan Rose rant where he says, basically titled, "Why You Should Make Lefty Hippies Guilty." Feel guilty. And he's like, just because what you said, if most lefties, like especially people who support Bernie Sanders, you know, they say, well, you know, government is us, government is society, you know, we have
right.
chosen, we have chosen this for us, so, you know, we are in control, you know, all this kind of crap. And I'm like, really? Did you sign did you determine how much money was going to be printed a couple of months ago? Did you determine which banks were going to be bailed out? Did you?
Right.
Did you determine which countries to invade, which countries to drone bomb? Did you?
Yeah.
Really?
Exactly.
We are the government.
Right. Exactly.
And
that's when the argument gets invalid, right? Because it's like, because you know they didn't sign off on that, and then they go, well, war is inevitable, or this is inevitable, or that's what government does. So, but then it isn't you that's in control. So what are you doing, you know?
Right. It's this completely mushy-headed idea of we, right?
Yeah.
And it completely discounts the individual completely. I mean, I understand people want to be part of a group, but once you're part of something that's just so monstrous and just horrific, you know,
yeah.
And you know, the military industrial complex, and how could you be well, you know, you need to pay your taxes because how else are gonna we're gonna have roads and bridges and tunnels. I'm like, who cares? You're worried about there's like children and weddings
there's
and people
children
dying like,
right now,
like,
because of US foreign policy, like, and you're worried about fucking roads.
People are worried like walking to work that they're gonna get a hellfire missile is gonna explode right next to them, and
right.
You're worried about it. I mean, how could you forget that? I don't understand how people can forget that. And it's important that we bring that. And actually, I don't know if you checked out my recent video with that I posted with Daniel Hawkins, but he said that there's an app called Metadata that have you heard about this?
I have not, and I didn't check out the video yet, but no.
Okay.
Tell me
about it. There's an app called Metadata, which you can put on your phone, and it alerts you every time there's a new drone strike.
Oh, wow.
And it even tells you how many people were injured or died.
Right.
And sometimes it even tells you if there were children involved. Oh, my God. And
right.
I'm like, wow. I don't even know how they get that information, but can you imagine that? Like having
right.
like an app like that, and I mean, maybe that would hit home. Like if somebody were to say, "Well, how do we have roads?" And you just take out this app and you open it up, and you're like, "You want to take a look at this?"
Yeah, exactly. But you know, and they're not going to, and they don't want to, you know, and because a lot of people, they feel helpless when it comes to the United States government, and they don't understand that all you have to do is stop validating it. Really,
right.
I mean. I stopped validating it a long time ago, and I don't agree with what they've been doing for a long time, if ever, you know, and but they think that's the difference is like when I talk to people who are, heavily statist and I'm heavily anarchist, they think that you're not voting is not doing anything. Kind of like unschooling is not learning, right? It's a similar right. concept where yeah. they go, oh, but what you're doing is you're just an armchair anarchist and all you're doing is espousing your theories. And I'm like, even if that were the case, at least I'm being honest. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, at least I'm the one that can acknowledge that government doesn't work. They're committing mass murder as we speak, as we're having this interview. Mm-hmm. So how can you sit comfortably with that? Well, and then I hear things like, well, but free college or this or that. And I'm like, but that doesn't, so that justifies all these people dying right now, you know? So what I get back to constantly is I'm not going to believe in that authority anymore. And I don't acknowledge it. And I am not a part of that death trap, you know, and I'm going to navigate my children as much as possible outside of that. I actually consider myself an outlaw for a reason. You know, I've always said that I was an outlaw and I've pretty much lived a lot of my life that way. And because I'm outside of the law, I don't break the law. I'm outside of it. I live outside of it. And that's how I raise my children, to be anarchist outlaws like their mother. So.
And I'm sure you'd be proud of that too.
Very proud.
Yeah. So yeah. And another thing, to get back to the government school conversation, is how do they get people to sign up for the military? Right.
Yeah.
And the best way and the easiest way is to do it like 12th grade, maybe even 11th grade. I don't even know that they start recruiting them and all the propaganda and stuff. But, you know, with the ROTC and crap like that, and they just, it's the easiest way, you know, raise in authoritarianism, go into another authoritarian environment. It's such a smooth transition. And you just take kids. And I think, I forget where I heard this, but that the rational thinking mind is not fully mature until like the age of 25, right? So if you can get people before then, you know, which is why, you know, it's so important to get them at that age into the military, it's an outstanding success rate for them, like to get mm-hmm. people recruited. And before right. they even know what they're doing, like they're in there and they're bombing these people and then kicking in people's doors and raids and surveillance and all this kind of, and reconnaissance missions and crap. And they don't even know what they're doing. They're like, what am I doing here? But, and then they wake up and they're like, I just committed atrocity yep. and evil in the name of, you know, my government. And right. I thought I was doing good, but I wasn't. And, you know, then they come back with PTSD, and it's just such a tragic situation. And, you know, it's like, what do you call that? I don't know, a human death machine or something. It's just disassembling human beings. And people cheer for this stuff, you know? Like, look how popular, like, this election is becoming. Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump and, oh.
And the other one.
Yeah.
So, let's not say your name.
Right. But, I mean, all of them, like, I mean... So, and then, you know, people, I don't know how people think, like, as long as we get the right person in office, then things right. will get better. We just need the right person to hold the ring of power, right?
Right.
Then people.
Yes, exactly. And what's funny is that all the candidates are the same, and everyone on either side is going, oh, well, my candidate's better because of this and this and this. And it's all about the same issue, right? Like, it's all about, both sides are heated about guns. Both sides are heated about abortion. Both sides are, you know, it's all, they all have their opinions, and, but all that does is create a division, right? Like, and that's what that's for. In fact, I had a conversation with a friend a couple days ago, and I was telling her about how I was explaining anarchy, and I said, she was saying, well, I guess I have to vote for Bernie. I'm like, why do you have to vote for anybody? You know, she's like, well, he's the better option. I'm like, no, he's not. She's like, well, I wouldn't want Trump. I'm like, you want to tell, let me tell you something. I can respect Trump a lot more than I do Bernie. You want to know why? Because at least he's honest about being violent toward people. Bernie Sanders has authorized, funding for the military throughout the course of his entire political career. And he has, you know, and a lot of people don't realize that. They think he's anti-war. He's not anti-war. He's authorized funding for wars, you know, or whatever military spending is happening. And so I had that conversation with her, and I said, I would have more respect for Trump because at least he's blatant about being a warmonger, whereas you guys are fooled into thinking that Bernie is not a warmonger. And she stopped and she said, oh, well, yeah. So what am I supposed to do? I'm like, don't validate the state. That's what it comes down to. Like, and nice. She was like, she goes, yeah. She's like, I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while because we've known each other since we were 15, so 21 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was like, and then she came back with, well, Obama is better than Bush. I'm like, okay. there are more countries being bombed. You know, he just continued Bush's policies. It's the same thing. It's just a puppet in this pseudo thing, you know? So I got her to stop and look at it. I'm like, even if she said, well, do you think Obama hasn't done anything for the United States? I'm like, I don't care if he gave everybody a house and money and whatever. It doesn't justify what he's done in the Middle East. It doesn't justify all the deaths that are on his hands. It doesn't justify all the drone strikes that he's authorized and all the invading of other countries. It doesn't matter what he's done here or what he's given you. Like, you got to stop looking at it from that perspective. We got to look at this as humanity, not, you know, just looking at your, you know, just looking at your own country. You got to look at it as like the world, like, you know. And that's one thing too, that, when I talk to people and they're worried about climate change, I'm like, I'm not worried about climate change. Humans are going to kill each other faster than anything. The earth will recover. I have full belief that the earth will recover. No problem. Like, it'll get back. It'll cleanse itself and humankind will be gone. But the biggest problem right now and the biggest death, the cause of death right now is humans.
Right.
We're killing each other faster than anything. So I think we need to like reshift our priorities and focus on that. You know what I mean? So
yeah. One thing that, Murray Rothbard did for me is realize the political euphemisms that permeate politics and government that really serve to mislead people into understanding what's really happening. Like, you know,
right.
you can call it currency creation, right? They call it currency creation, but it's really counterfeiting.
Right.
You know, you can call it the war on terror, but it's really mass murder. You know,
right.
you can call it taxation, but it's really theft.
Right.
You know, and it's important. And so another euphemism that I think we should dispense with to help people to understand what's going on is you can call it, they call it the president of the United States, but I would rather call it the mass murderer.
Exactly.
And it's kind of funny that it's like, you know, murderers, serial killers are in prison for like life, right?
Right.
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 That guy's a serial killer. Look at him. He killed and he mangled people and he cut up their body parts and put them in his wall and everything.
Right.
But vote for Obama.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Vote for this candidate. Vote for that candidate. And the wars will keep coming. The invasions will continue. You know,
right.
the drone strikes will continue. And
yes.
People, you know, they don't see the disconnect there that you know, war is organized mass murder, right?
Right.
And you know, one of my favorite Voltaire quotes is murder is unacceptable unless it's brought about by the sound of trumpets.
Right.
You know, and
right.
And it completely puts it into perspective, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I'm thinking back to the 1984 book where, you know, the war is peace, freedom is slavery thing, right? Like, that's people actually believe that now.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They actually believe, well, in order to have peace, we got to bomb the hell out of this group of people over here, right? Which where did that how does that make sense to
right,
you as
right.
a human being? How, you know, so.
Yeah, that reminds me of the George Carlin quote, fighting for peace is like screwing for virginity.
Right, pretty much. Exactly.
It's like, I love when Adam Kokesh, I don't know if you've seen any much of his videos, but he does a great job. The Man in the Street videos where he talks to people and just deconstructs their arguments very calmly, very coolly.
Right.
You know, it's like after the American Sniper movie came out, he was talking to people about that and they're like, he's a wonderful man, you know. And like, well, what was he doing over there? Oh, he was protecting our country. He was defending our country. Really? You defend by going across an ocean? That's how you defend.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's like, these people were terrorists. Are you sure about that? How does he know? Because he was told that, you know, these people you have to kill. And how does he know? Like, where does he get his information? And, you know, maybe these people were just attacking them because they were in their country and they were being invaded by foreign people, you know?
Right.
Like, who wouldn't want to defend your family and your property when other people are invading?
Exactly. How dare they? How dare they put up a fight? How dare they not let us bring in democracy and prop up our own dictators for our own personal use? How dare those people, right?
Right, right. So you know, bringing it full swing around to what we're talking about is, you know, by raising our kids the way we do, by raising them with a sense of, you know, self-reliance, self-confidence, peacefully, compassionately, rationally, morally. It's so important, the moral part.
Right.
Because once you understand how to live morally, you know, you don't need laws. You don't need regulations to act, right? Because your morality should be your inner law, basically. That should be the rule that you live by, your own conscience, you know? And for most people, I think that most people's consciences are intact. There are a certain subset of people that are sociopaths and, you know, really do not have a conscience or morality. But I think for the most part, you know, I meet people on all the time on the street when I'm out with my kids, and, you know, nobody wants to kill me. Nobody wants to rob me. Most people.
Exactly.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, even still, even, you know, laws are completely useless. They're completely useless because when you think about it, prohibition doesn't work. I mean, if it did, then murder and rape would have ceased to exist when we made it illegal in this country. But the thing is that those people, whoever wants to commit, you know, whatever crime they're going to commit, they're not going to go, oh, but it's against the law. you know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's going to exist. And that's the other thing that is just funny to me. It's that, if you are raised in an environment and you are given your own autonomy and you can develop your sense of self and develop your sense of community, you will start caring for people. You will start understanding how things work and you'll understand your own personal code of ethics. And, one more reason why government's irrelevant, you know, laws, they don't work and they don't do anything except for give profit to the state.
Yeah. And basically, you know, initiate violent conflict where initially there was none.
Right.
And you kind of reminded me of, you're talking about how laws are irrelevant, irrelevant. That this one cartoon of you see a criminal with a gun, and then he's like, hold on, let me check the book. And he has a book of gun laws. Hold on, let me just check the book first.
Exactly. Right.
It's like if people are going to commit a crime, they're going to commit a crime regardless of, you know, the tens of thousands of laws in the Federal Registry, which nobody knows at all.
Right. Exactly.
And the book, you know, every time people say, well, you got to obey the law. You got to, you know, if it's law, you got to obey I'm like, do you know all the laws yourself? Like, have you researched all the law? Yeah, you know, there's a great book that I have not read, but I want to, by this, I think he's a lawyer, Harvey Silverglade, which is entitled Three Felonies a Day. Have you heard of this book?
No, but I have heard of him. I read an article by him.
Harvey Silverglade. Three Felonies a Day. Basically how everybody commits three felonies a day.
Easily.
Everybody.
Right.
You know? Right. And the first thing I tell people when they tell me, like, you got to obey the law, I'm like, wait a minute. So are you telling me that you drive below the speed limit on the highway?
Right.
Because if you're not, you're a filthy criminal.
Right,
and
exactly.
And you should be locked up.
Exactly.
So, laws and regulations and government and laws and regulations are ridiculous and irrelevant and do not work. And government and statism, more accurately, is the belief in authority. You know, we like to say that government doesn't exist, but I'd rather say it's the belief in authority. Like, you know, the people, the IRS, they exist. The buildings, the tanks, all the, you know, the stealth fighters, stealth bombers, all those exist, right? But it's the belief in authority that makes it government. It makes in them the exemption to morality that they can do this stuff. You know, people can go overseas and kill people and not get charged with murder.
Right.
And if they do it here, they get charged with murder. Like, that's an amazing thing, you know?
Right.
And people need to realize that. So, you know, I kept you for long enough. I know you have to get back to your children, but my audience a little bit if you want to finish up with anything before we sign off. You have any last messages for the people?
I put on the spot. I'm excited to start this podcast. I'm excited to talk about parenting. I'm excited to be an anarchist. You know, we live in a time where things are really bad. So what do you have to lose, right? You might as well follow your conscience, and you might as well lead an example for your children. And I really believe that anarchy is going to save humanity. And if it's not my generation, it'll be some generation. But I really believe that the community of anarchists that we have now, and what you're doing with your podcast or the Seeds of Liberty podcast, or I really feel like that's really helping to shift humanity to the next stage that we need to get to. That, or, you know, we'll kill each other off. So, but I am a little bit more optimistic. I'd like to think that my personal decisions to be an outlaw and to not give in to government will enable my children to carry that on and be that themselves. So
I've known you for a few months now, so my goal is to help you maintain optimism and positivity.
And that's what you do. Actually, that's what you do. I don't know how many times I've emailed you and I went, oh my gosh, Danilo, what's going on? This world is crazy. How am I going to navigate it with my children? And you always respond with the most even keel positive message, and it's wonderful. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, my mother-in-law, she basically says a similar thing, you know, like, you know, we're all slaves, and you know how expensive it is to live every day. I calculate how expensive it is to live. You know, it's like
right.
Man, so much suffering. And
yeah.
and you know, and I think that and also even, you know, my wife, she's she's closer to being an anarchist, not completely like me, but she's more about like, let's just not make too many waves, you know, go along to get along, that kind of person.
Right.
And I'm like, and the way I look at it is, you know, we have one life, and our life is a message. Right, to
sure.
The future, the way you
yeah.
live your life, and everything that we do, anything you write, you know, videos you make, podcasts, websites, blogs, those are snapshots of your thoughts at this particular time, right? And
right,
so,
exactly.
And so we should take care what kind of message we're giving to the future, right?
Exactly.
And so that's why this is so important, is we're all leaving our voice, and that's why I love to do what I do, you know, so my kids will see in the future, you know, what I stood for. And, you know,
exactly.
I can't control what they're going to, nor do I want to, what they're going to do, what they're going to believe, but at least they know where I stand. And,
exactly.
You know, if they want to follow my footsteps, sure, that would be great. But if not, you know, they have their own life.
Sure, exactly.
So, awesome conversation, Melissa. Actually, before we go, I like to ask my guests, what's your favorite quote of all time?
It's very simple. It's along the lines of how crazy everything is. But my favorite quote of all time is Bill Hicks. It's just a ride. And that's all it is. Like, you don't need to worry. You don't freak out. It's going to be okay. You know? It's just a ride is a mantra that I have very often throughout the day. So that's definitely one of my favorites.
And then actually, there's one part in that quote that I really like where he says, and then there are people who know that it's just a ride, and then they try to tell the other people, hey, this is just a ride. And you know what,
we
do to those people? We kill them.
Right. Right. So I don't say it too loudly. I just say it to myself.
Yeah. Well, this is not too loud. This is just going to be broadcast over the YouTube and, you know, Facebook.
Right.
And not too loud. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
But that's great. I love Bill Hicks also, and I have a background in stand-up comedy, so...
right,
you know, George,
that's right.
George
yeah.
Carlin, Bill Hicks, and then there's the less political comedians like Rodney Dangerfield and Emo Phillips that I really look up to. So,
sure.
Yeah, that's that. You know, having a background in stand-up comedy also has helped me to, you know, look at the bright side and just take, you know, because I think I forget who said it, but comedy is based in tragedy. Like,
right.
like there's a great quote that I like, which is, to the people who feel. The world is a drama,
right.
And to the people who think the world is a comedy.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I love that quote
yeah.
so much. So that's kind of how I look at it. But yeah, excellent conversation, Melissa.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank
on the
you
show.
For having me.
Really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
So we're looking forward to the new podcast coming up,
right.
And we're gonna work on that, try to get it started as quick as we can.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to help me out on my show, you can do so through Bitcoin, through PayPal, or Patreon. It's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. If you find value in this content, please contribute. You know, we are capitalists in the end. And, you know, I love to do this. I love to interview interesting people like Melissa, and I would want to do more. But, you know, monetary compensation is always appreciated and encouraged, right? It's just a feedback mechanism lets me know that you love hearing this stuff. And so more encouragement as well. So awesome conversation. Thank you very much. So this is the Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.